I was just sitting here thinking that it would be really funny if Sven swapped everybody's intro music out, you know? And if he were to do that, I want the intro music next week to my show to be the intro music for Real Britannia. You know, dun, 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 dun. I think it'd be fun. This is why you're lucky. You're lucky Sven runs the network and not me, because I would just do random stuff like that thinking... thinking it was funny. But you are here at the Parish of the Patriots 178th installment, believe it or not. Glad you joined us this week, as always. Really do appreciate it. And we do have a Christian specific. If this is your first time tuning in, we do have a Christian specific segment, a sermon, if you would. That's roughly at the halfway mark of the show, very roughly, usually. A lot about this show is very roughly. We do very roughly get the you know, the money talk. We pass the offering plate around early instead of late, so we get that done now. There's nothing behind a paywall. There's no subscription. Don't like and subscribe or whatever, any of all that. We just pass the plate around. Ask that if you can, you know, if everybody sent a little bit, it really does make a big difference for me. Things are tough all over. You know that. So, you know, it's not like I'm asking you to send your life saving. Just a little bit. If everybody sent a little bit, it goes a long way. And it's easy to do. If you want to be a part of that, just scroll down through the description until you hit the P.O. box. You'll see that I've got a P.O. box. We've got snail mail right below that. Got Bitcoin. Got a Monero address. Got the email down there for your notes. If you have a different cryptocurrency, you got some old, I don't know, Ethereum Classic or something you've been looking to get rid of, drop me an email, because I can get you an address for probably just about any kind of cryptocurrency. And again, it is all very much appreciated. And with that having been said, let's rush off into the listener supporter mailbag this week. Grandpa Dan, always great to hear your broadcast. By the way, monoclonal antibodies have successfully been used to fight cancer. And that's from Paula. Very much appreciated. And by the way, I try to remember to say this every week. I usually don't remember to say it every week. And that is, I do obviously we read them on the show, but I mean, sometimes I'll get like six pages, you know, number 12 font stapled together. Obviously I do edit down, you know, to kind of keep things on point. I also will edit down to keep things from being what I consider too personal, too identifiable for y'all. But don't ever think like he didn't even read the stuff that I sent him, because I do. I really do read all of it. So yeah, you know, I do appreciate it. I'll be going next month for my consultation, you know, for, I guess, the next surgery. And really, y'all know, I'm not really excited about being cut on further, but you know, things are good. I'll be going here, in the next week to, get another scan, because I have to do these very regularly. I have to do another scan, just keeping an eye out. You know, make sure the melanoma doesn't come back anywhere. So, you know, we're just keeping on, you know. Nothing, no point in getting down and out about anything. GPD is something for the plate, and that's from Mr. T every week, and I really do appreciate it. Does mean a lot. Let's see here. Next up, GPD. I wanted to ask for some advice on how to reach my son without alienating him. When I do breach these topics, he tends to get very uncomfortable and gets quiet and just wants to drop it. I very much value your response. Thanks in advance, Gramps. God bless you and your family. And that's from Red Pilled in Vienna. And this is a case I read everything else. There was a whole lot here. You know, and some of it I kind of consider more personal information, but yes, I do read it. I got all the background there. And, you know, I'm taking it that his son is entering young adulthood. Well, all I could say is, you know, I would say don't make it too heavy. You know, don't... To get past the, you know, because you have to understand younger people, you know, young people today, you know, they are bombarded with the propaganda. They are indoctrinated into it. It's inescapable. It's really everywhere you go. There's no getting around it. And young people are going to be, you know, they're going to be susceptible to it, because again, they're impressionable. That's why they purposely go after the younger people. That's why they push for this stuff now, younger and younger, you know, little kids. They want to indoctrinate them into all of this stuff, shall we say. So how do you, if you got children that are coming into young adulthood, how do you breach these topics without them just, you know, turning you off? And I would say just lighten up about it a little bit. Don't be so serious about it. You know, try to make it to where it's not uncomfortable. Now I've got, you know, it don't make it something, you know, you do all the time, and try to keep it light. You know, I mean, it's an example, like for me personally, you know, like around my house, you know, I have a running joke I do. Like, for instance, I don't know if the dishwasher were to decide to break down, you know, the dishwasher was to break down and you know, you're looking at it, it's like, man, this thing broke down. I don't know what's wrong with it. And I'll look around and with a deadpan face, I'll say something like, you know, well, personally, you know, I blame the Jews for this. So, well, obviously the Jews don't have anything to do with the dishwasher breaking down. It's just a joke. You know, it's a funny thing. You know, it's like a meme. You know, it's like, I blame the Jews for the car breaking down. You know, it's, in other words, you make this sort of stuff kind of a lighthearted thing where you don't take yourself so serious, and then people can feel, you know, less uncomfortable. You know, don't be so heavy on talking about, you know, the things that are wrong with the world around us and the topics that you're trying to discuss. You need to make this stuff light. Try to make it lighthearted. Don't feel like you're lecturing. You know, just, they get that all of the time. And of course, as always, I think it's important to do your best to lead by example. And that's, you know, again, I stress, do your best. None of us are 100% good with that, you know. And just keep the line of communication open. It's got to be a both ways. Let them, let your kids talk to you and listen to them. You know, don't just sit there and halfway listen and look for an excuse to, you know, let me tell you why, and to start lecturing them again about, I mean, listen to what they're saying, you know, try to put yourself in their shoes, understand where they're coming from, and, you know, tell them the truth. And again, when possible, try to keep things light. Don't try to make things heavy and awkward. Try to keep them light, and you don't have to ever, you know, if you do find that your kids are listening to you, you know, you don't have to cram everything into one sitting, you know, to where, like, they asked you a simple question, you're communicating, and you're 5 minutes in, but you're going to turn this into an hour-long discussion. I'm not saying the listener does this. I'm just, this stuff applies to everybody. You know, I'm trying to cover everybody here. Don't turn it into an hour-long lecture on, you know, on the role of Freemasonry, whatever the heck else you want to make it about, you know. Don't need to do that. Try to keep it light. Try to lead by example. You know, just do your best. And understand that, yes, your kids have been, you know, it's inevitable that they're exposed to this. It's everywhere in the culture. It's everywhere in social media. It's in the schools. Understand this. But as they grow, as long as you lead and try to express truth and try to make them understand that you're always open to communication. You know, you're always open to communication. You always talk. You know, if they can talk to you, they will listen to you. You may not think they're listening to you, but they'll listen to you. You know, just try to keep it light. Try to always keep those lines of communication open. And as they mature, they're going to grow out of this stuff. I think one of the advantages for traditionalists now is the fact that this stuff is so, quote unquote, they've brought the extreme into the mainstream. They really have, you know, they brought the extreme into the mainstream. And now, you know, as kids mature, they become teens, young adults, you know, by instinct, they'll want to rebel against the mainstream. It's just an instinctual thing. It's related to them expressing their independence and that they're growing up and they break away from their parents. And as they have brought the extreme leftism, the extreme liberal ideology now into the mainstream, I think it's natural that at some point a lot of kids, especially young men, are going to rebel against that because that is the mainstream. So, I mean, just keep the lines of communication open. Don't be heavy about it. Keep it lighthearted. You know, make a joke out of some of this stuff, you know? You know, I don't know, you know, the heaviness of the topics and the conversation terms, but start kind of being a little light about it. Kind of make fun of yourself about it a little bit. Like, you know, the example I gave of what I do, because I do. I think it's funny. I try to laugh at things, you know? Otherwise, I'd get depressed. might get depressed anyway, to be honest. But I do. I still try to find humor in things. I think God gave us a sense of humor. Sense of humor for a reason. Dear Grandpa, hope all is well with you and yours. May God bless and thanks for the good counsel. And the belly laughs. That's from Nick. And yes, once again, I did read the other stuff here. Good stuff. Good to know. Lots of great advice with the cancer thing. I can't believe I'm at this age and dealing with this stuff. I told somebody the other day, I said, you know, I you have to understand, I'm in my mid-50s now, and I've lived my entire life. You can count the number of times I've been to the doctor on one hand. I mean, I just don't. I'm a healthy person. You know, I don't. And now it's like I'm getting... I just wake up one day and I'm already doing old people doctor talk all the time. It's like, well, how many doctor's appointments do I got now? Yeah, I just go to the doctor. It's like I'm getting it all crammed in here in this one. In this one year, I'm doing it all. But I do appreciate hearing from all of you. I appreciate the advice. I appreciate the prayers. It means a lot to me. I just say I'm humbled from it. And again, I always enjoy hearing from all of you. So we get off into our show. That does wrap up the listener supporter mailbag, by the way. We get off into our show. My ramblings for this. You may not know it, but there's been a lot of burning down of church buildings in the country. I mean, some of them high profile, but a lot of them not. You know, churches have been vandalized. It's funny from a Christian perspective. It's funny. I don't really mean funny, ha-ha, more like funny, strange. But it's funny from a Christian perspective that you bring up the satanic element of clown world and people get awkward and squirmy about that. And they don't like it. But, I mean, it's like so in your face. You know, you've got churches are being vandalized. A lot of churches are being burned down. There's a lot of, like, rural churches in very rural areas that people are going in there and burning them down. This is happening. The media is not talking about it, but you can find the information out there. In one of the articles I was reading about this going on, it was pointed out, it's like, you know, Republicans are demanding that Joe Biden do something about these domestic terrorists, these left-wing domestic terrorists. And once again, it's just a classic example. Here's TMR, our version here in America of the Tories in Britain. You know, the Republicans demand Joe Biden do something. These congressmen are just helpless. They're just helpless. Why do we have them? Because by their own basic admission, they can't do anything. They have to demand Joe Biden do something about it. Yeah, you know, it just really sickens me. I just can't stand it. No, we're just helpless. The Republicans are demanding Joe Biden do something about these domestic terrorists. And of course, if you've been like, I don't know, not living under a rock for the past 5-10 years, you know what that means. You know who they demand he do something about these domestic terrorists. So we know what that means. No extreme leftists are going to actually be arrested. I mean, I guess if they like literally catch them in the act, somebody might arrest them. But by and large, you know, you've got people on social media have magically managed to keep their social media accounts calling for action, calling for people to go and vandalize and burn down churches. You got it. And they don't get banned. These operations are well-funded, well-organized. No investigation. Is the FBI going to look in to see who's inciting this stuff? No, we know how this works. No actual leftists who are committing arson, who are destroying property, who are doing all these things are actually going to be investigated and are going to be hassled. Instead, the quote unquote domestic terrorists will be what? People criticizing the government on the internet. People like you and me who point out all of the lies in their narratives. And heaven help us, if they get their wish and get a war with Russia and China, all of a sudden, any of this criticism of the government's policies, you're going to be accused of aiding and abetting the enemy. And you're going to be branded traitors and hauled off somewhere, which is what they really want to do anyway. Republicans demand Joe Biden do something about these domestic terrorists. I wonder what the outcome of this will be. Weren't the Republicans worried about any of the January 6th protesters who were still locked up in a jail cell somewhere? You think Liz Cheney's going to come down from her stupid show hearing on Capitol Hill and talk about arson being committed by extreme left? No. No, we know who the domestic terrorists will be. People complaining about government policy on the internet, same as it ever was. We'll get people accused of these vague terms, you know, domestic terrorists. We better hold them down. We wish we could hold them down. If there was any accountability, I say we should, but we don't really have any way. But if we could, we would demand definitions, you know. Government needs to do something about domestic terrorists. First, whoa. Give us a definition. We want something concrete we can nail down here. What is going to be classified as a domestic terrorist? Because they throw these terms around. They do. They throw these terms around and people assume they know what they mean. Domestic terrorists are talking about these people committing arson and burning buildings down and threatening people. You know, these extreme leftist activists. No, they don't. That's not going to be what they mean. It'll be you're promoting racism and hatred on the internet by their definition. And again, those terms won't be defined. They never define the terms. You'll always notice this about these people. They do not define the terms. They throw them around. You're supposed to assume that you're using the same definitions. They change the definitions or they leave them undefined so that they can make them mean whatever they want them to mean. I mean, take racism, for example. We get accused of the racism quite a bit. And yet, what is it? It's something never defined. I was thinking about this just the other day. They never define the racism. You know, nationalists get accused of racism like constantly. It's just like a constant thing. But what does it mean? What does it mean?
Well, you know what it means.
No, I don't know what the definition means. So before doing the show, I pulled this up. This is the Merriam-Webster. This is supposed to be like, you know, one of the mainstream definition, you know, dictionary sources here. Pull up racism. What does it mean? And you notice that I start going through these definitions and obviously they're even changing them in the literal, you know, how they're written in these dictionaries. Number one, a belief that race is a fundamental determinant of human traits and capacities and that racial differences produce an inherent superiority of a particular race. What a muddled up definition. Where do they get this? Where did they get this? A belief that race is a fundamental determinant of human traits and capacities and racial differences produce an inherent superiority of a particular race. Well, as somebody that's been accused a lot of being racist, I can tell you that's bullshit. You know, race is a fundamental determinant. Look, take race out for a minute and use this term, genetics. Race. Race is not skin color. Race is genetic. Your overall genetic makeup. Now, skin color can be a part of that, but it's not all of that. So if we put genetics in there, a belief that genetics is a fundamental determinant of human traits, all of a sudden that sounds silly, doesn't it? Well, it's like, no duh, of course it does. See, race is just a reflective of your genetic makeup. You take out race, the race in there is a fundamental, like the color of your skin. Once again, hold the definitions. Race is a fundamental determinant. Wait, race is just a reflection of your genetic makeup that makes up who you are. You know, if you're African, you can look at them and say, that's an African person. That's a person of African descent. They have a genetic makeup. And that racial differences produce an inherent superiority of a particular race. No, it makes inherent differences. Why do they throw this superiority? It's just differences. That's it. You are going to get different outcomes. The anti-racist narrative says that everybody's exactly the same. Everybody's cookie cutter. Everybody, the race doesn't exist, which basically is a denial that genetics exists. It's really sad, isn't it? It's really silly, isn't it? Same people would tell you they love the science, but they're saying genetics don't exist. Well, if genetics do exist, then race exists. It's the overall, like, I don't know what I want to say, the overall format that your genetics, the boundaries that your genetics are operating in is the basic setting is reflected in the racial group. But it's not about superiority. It's just that they're going to be different. I always laugh because you have these people that do, they've got this belief that race somehow doesn't exist, that which basically means genetics don't exist, and we're all the same, but for the color of the skin, and because you have different outcomes for different racial groups, it must mean that there is this, like, I don't know, secret plot secret plot to keep people of other racial groups down. That's why you get different outcomes. Now, people who deal in reality, those of us that get accused of the racism, we say that, no, they have different, they live a different way. They have different outcomes because they're a different people. It's not about being superior or not. You'll notice one of the underlying themes as these anti-racists, you know, fight the racism and say they want this different outcome for, say, blacks. We're just going to say blacks here. That obviously, that's not the only, but that's one of the groups that always gets highlighted here. Say for black people, when it comes down to these people's view, this is what's funny, because they throw this superiority of a particular race. And as these anti-racists pat themselves on the back for fighting against the racism, what are they saying? I mean, what does victory look like for them? At the end of the day, black people will act just like white people. Now who's claiming that race is, it's about one race being superior to another? They look at the black community and say, that's inferior. That is what they're saying. I'm really not trying to do the whole, you know, D3R here thing, but really, I think the truth is the truth, and that's what's important here. They are saying that those people are living in an inferior manner. They live an inferior lifestyle. And if we could just end this mythical racism, then all of a sudden they will act and live just like white people. Now tell me that isn't a little bit arrogant. Where people deal with reality about things like genetics and race say that, well, they live a different way because there's a different people. I mean, and you know, of course, like I say, we use black people as an example. But let's use a different racial group. I mean, let's look at Asians as a, you know, larger ethnic group. Let's look at Asians. Now, you know, genetically speaking, on average, they tend to be higher IQ than white people. You know, so it's not about putting anybody down. You know, but they have an overall different way of viewing things. They have an overall different way of a different mindset. Why? Because it's a part of their genetic makeup. If you're going strictly by IQ, then you would say, well, Asian people are superior. They're the most superior race because on average, they have the highest IQ. But it's just about being different. They have a different way. They have a different mindset. Like if you go to Japan, well, I've never been to Japan, but you can do street view and you can look at how people live in Japan. And they live stacked one on top of the other. Like the population density of Tokyo is something you can't even imagine. I don't know how they live like that and don't be completely insane, because I would go completely insane. But they can live like that because they're wired different. They have much more of a group mentality, a group mindset than, say, white people do. It's just that they're different. It's not about being superior. That's just silliness. Now, they have more definitions here. That was definition number one. Let's go to definition number 2A. This gets more modernized as we go. And again, this is Merriam-Webster. This is supposed to be a, you know, legit straight up dictionary type of thing here. The systemic oppression of a racial group to the social, economic, and political advantage of another. Now, what are they defining as oppression? Ultimately, their definition of oppression is they live in a different manner. They don't live in, you know, they don't live, because, okay, if I sit here and say, you know, stick with my Asian analogy. If I sit here and say Chinese people are smarter than white people. But just going off of basic average IQ, Chinese people are smarter than white people. Is that racist? Because it can't be oppression. Now, some people say it is. You're racist. How dare you? You know, so there's no oppression involved here. How are they defining oppression? I think at the end of the day, what they're trying to do here, because this is just word jumble here. Oppression. Define oppression for us then. What is oppression? They're talking about different outcomes. One of the things that they've been doing in this country is going around, this kind of really started heavy in the Obama years. They go around and they're moving black people out of these black neighborhoods and the cities and whatnot. And they're moving them, you know, into other areas, into white areas. You know, they put up these government houses and they move these black people in here. Now, for what reason? because they expect a different outcome. If we and again, this comes back to who is claiming racial superiority here. Is the excuse then that if we do this, these black people will finally start acting like white people? Because it's not like they're any different. It's not like they're a different group that has a different mindset, a different value system, just a different way of thinking and approaching things. No, we can't say that. If we just move them closer and move them amongst among the white people, they'll start acting like white people. Because you see, if they live among their own kind of people in a way that a good liberal says is inferior to the way they should be living, it can't be because they're just a different people and that's the way they live, that's the way they think, and this is the result of those things. No, it has to be because they're being oppressed. They're being oppressed because they don't live like white people. You see, it's like they're taking these definitions and trying to come up with a second definition to reinforce the first one. And finally, definition 2B, a political or social system founded on racism. So they're defining racism here. Again, we're still under the definition of racism. And this is how bad things have gotten. They're using the word that they're supposed to be defining as a part of the definition. They're using a political or social system founded on racism and designed to execute its principles. A political or social system founded on the definition of the word that we're supposed to be defining here. It's designed and to execute its principles. So again, what principles are we talking about here? The principles of oppressing other racial groups because of the hatred of the color of the skin or whatever. We don't ever actually get any definitions, do we? They just, you know, even if you go to the dictionary, and try to find a definition so that everybody can work with, it's just a whole jumble mess like this that goes around in a circle. Racial superiority. It's a racist superiority. It's a belief that race is just a reflection of your genetics. You know, I don't know. You know, it's like seeing a car and saying that's a car, and then look over here, I see an airplane. That's an airplane. How racist of you? How, you know, it's those things don't exist. The car could be an airplane, and the airplane can be a car if they want to be. It doesn't even make any sense. It's just a reflection of your overall genetic group. Is it that hard to understand? It's just amazing me. You can't even go to the dictionary and get real definitions. No. Because if they gave you a real definition, it would go something like this. So what it, because really, I'll be back up here. Because really, at the end of the day, in this modern context of things, racism is nothing more than just calling people names. If you say you're a racist, they're just calling you a name. It is no different if they said you're fat and ugly. Except if they said you were fat and ugly, you could look in the mirror and determine that. You know, well, look in the mirror. It's like, yeah, I am fat. Okay, well, they're telling the truth. Well, I am ugly. Well, matter of perspective, maybe, but you may just be butt-ass ugly, too. You can nail that down. But when they call you these names, white supremacist, racist, they're just calling you names. There's no definition. Whenever you press them for definitions, they will quickly come up empty. They will stutter around and say, you know what it means. So tell me. I mean, you're the one saying, all these people over here are racist. You're saying the entire system is racist, 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 racist. Tell us what that means. Go ahead and give us a definition, and then we can work on it. For just like we did here. Okay, we went to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary online. And the first definition, which ends up with, you know, one race is superior to another, well, then you can't accuse me of being racist because I don't make that claim that one race is superior to another. They're just different. Now, me personally, I'm white, and I prefer, you know, a more functioning society. And you know, these are the things I prefer. I prefer the things that are inherent in a white society. Somebody living in China is going to prefer the things that are inherent in a Chinese society. A person living in Japan is going to appreciate the things that are inherent in Japanese society. Somebody living in India, an Indian living in India, is going to appreciate the things that are reflective of the Indian society because it's a reflective of their genetic group, their in-group, their people. They're just different. As a white person, do I look at sub-Sahara Africa and say, man, I wish I could live like that? Well, no, because I'm white. Not because, you know, it's superiority. No, those people live like that because that's the way they live. Then, and they want to live among their own people. Is it this that hard? I look at the way people live in India. I don't want to live like that because I'm not an Indian. That these so-called anti-racists will look at these things and say, oh, it's because of systemic oppression that they live like that. That's insulting. They live like that because that's the way they live, because they're different. Why do you think everybody wants to live like white people? They don't. You know, I mean, they might like the things that, you know, white people create. I mean, I look at the society and say, well, we want to go in and get a part of that, you know, because they have, you know, better functioning, utilities or whatever, you know. But at the end of the day, people will always wind up wanting, you know, preferring to live among their own people groups. It's just, that's human nature. But they throw they're just calling you names. The point, I guess, is that they're just calling you names. When they throw these terms out and accuse you of this and that, all they're doing is calling you names. They don't have anything. You're white supremacy. You're white supremacy. I don't know. You know, it's just, I don't know. You know, just pointing out, like I say, if you look at that definition that we went over and you take race out and substitute it with genetics, all of a sudden the definition, which is more accurate, by the way, because again, race is just a reflection of your genetic makeup, then all of a sudden that sounds real silly. Well, it'd be like, well, of course, you know, because it's defined the way they worded in the definition is, you know, you're supposed to come off with the impression that this is a horrible negative thing. But when you take race out and put genetics in, there's inherent belief that genetics is a determining, well, no shit. I love the science! Exclamation point. We're supposed to pretend genetics don't exist because, of course, because everything in this society is inverted. Everything is based on lies, and everything they perpetuate and continue and become more oppressive as the lies continue to break down, you know, and one lie contradicts the last lie. So then they have to, you know, shut more people down so people can't complain and point out and make fun of them. And they create this, I don't know, this bubble, this zone that's supposed to be devoid of reality. And yet at some point the bubble bursts because reality and the truth will always reexert itself. People by their very nature are going to want to live among their own people. A black person living in the city can go live in whatever neighborhood they can afford to live in that they want to go live in. And what do? They live among other black people. Why? Because that's what they want to do. You know, is that wrong? Is it wrong that black people want to congregate with other black people? Well, no. Obviously, it's human nature. Why do you think we have areas and cities called Chinatown? Because the Chinese people all tend to want to congregate amongst one another, among their own people. It's called human nature. But if a white person says that, they're called racist. They get accused of white supremacy. They get called all these names. When at the end of the day, it's nothing more than just human nature. It's just what people of all races, of all genetic makeup, it's what they all do by their very instincts. It's just human nature. And yet somehow, if white people abide by this same human nature, it's called racism. We need to go ahead and get into the Christian specific segment this week. It's about the halfway mark. We actually got close to the halfway mark for a change this week. So we need to get off into that. So, I mean, like I say, if you're new, I encourage you to stick around for it. It's not like, you know, regular going to church kind of, you know, preaching at you type of thing. We always say the fun discussion continues. The way to think of it is the fun discussion continues. It just continues with a more of a focus from a Christian perspective. So anyway, with that having been said, as I say every week, you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon, as it were, here at the Parish of the Patriots. You know, it's funny because I always say, get in, you know, these sermons. I call these sermons. I don't even know how sermon-like they really are. It's really more of just a Christian-centered discussion. I don't even know if you could qualify what we do here as sermons. Hopefully you get something out of it. You've probably figured out by now, if you've been listening any amount of time, like a lot of the stuff we discuss. I mean, I try to spend time every day in prayer, and I'm trying to figure these things out, trying to work through things and try to understand God greater. And probably the vast majority of the time, what we discuss here is just stuff I've been thinking about and praying on and trying to understand over the past week. And you know, so I share it with y'all, and hopefully we can all kind of gain some understanding together. I guess the point is, by no means is this a, I've had this figured out for years, and I've just picked this up, looked at my long list of stuff I have figured out, and I decided to share it with you. I'm just a regular guy, just like all of the rest of you. So sometimes I think our discussions are going to kind of merge in, be kind of like almost leading off from the week before, because obviously, I'm continuing to think about and pray on these things. So I think sometimes there's some continuity, perhaps, between, you know, among these discussions. I don't know. But anyway, bear with me, I guess. But hopefully you do get something out of it. I know I enjoy having these discussions. It's because it gets my mind going. You know, a lot of times you sit around and you pray and you're thinking about things and seeking God and trying to understand him and understanding his word and understanding what you see going on in the world around you. But it feels so isolating by sitting here and doing these shows and having these discussions. You know, it's, I don't want to say therapeutic. It helps my mind kind of shift into another gear and hopefully gain, you know, I think gain a little more understanding. And again, hopefully by doing these discussions and sharing this stuff, you know, it works for you and y'all get something out of it, and y'all will start thinking and praying, yeah, but that could mean this and that and so on and so forth. Well, in other words, we're all trying to grow spiritually. It's kind of the thing. And it's very important. I mean, obviously as Christian believers, well, no duh, it's important. You know, we want to mature spiritually. We got to enter the kingdom of God, doing it, enter the eternal realm someday. We want to be as ready as we can be for that transition. When we transition, we're all going to transition. When we all transition to the eternal realm, we want to be as ready as we can possibly be. But it's also important in this life. Terrible times are coming. I mean, look around. I mean, we are barreling towards. It's rolling down. In the words of Merle Haggard, we're rolling downhill like a snowball headed for hell. I mean, this thing is coming apart and we're heading towards really, really uncharted waters. I mean, the economy's collapsing. They're apparently going to try to start World War III that they're not going to be able to win. I mean, also the social fabric is ripping apart. The country's never been more divided than it is now. The economy, I've said for years, the only thing holding America together is this sense of relative economic prosperity. And by relative, I mean, it's like, yeah, we're maybe not doing that great, but we think that we have this perspective that compared to everybody else on the planet, we're doing pretty well. But I think that perception is going to be lost. It's going to become to the point that it can't be papered over. I was talking with somebody recently and I was pointing out that, you know, adjusted for inflation, wages have been basically going down for, I don't know, 40, 50 years, for a long time. I saw a news story that this isn't very preachy. We're going to get into it. But I saw a story the other day they put out trying to make people feel better. And they were saying, you know, some random group up in Yankee Land did a study and says they project that within the next year, wages are going to rise 4%. Now, never mind, they're obviously just pulling that out of nowhere. You know, they're pulling that out of thin air. How did they come up with this projection? You know, it's kind of like the joke, what's your source? I pulled it out of my ass. They project this. But even if that's true, they're admitting to 9% inflation. And that's, we know they're fluffing those numbers. But again, we'll just go with what they're saying. Say their projection is true and say that their inflation's true. 9% inflation. But they're projecting, don't worry. And this was, I mean, like I say, this story was presented as, this is really good news. Your wages are going to go up 4%. See how great that is. But if inflation goes up 9%, that means you're getting a 5% cut in pay. Oh, but you should be thrilled. You're not getting a 9% cut in pay. See? We know that the vast majority of people in the country are literally living paycheck to paycheck. You know, they're living paycheck to paycheck. If you're already living paycheck to paycheck, a 5% cut in pay is going to put you under. know, I mean, it really is. The point is to reel things back in is that things are fixing to get, things are getting bad and they're going to get a whole lot worse. As this thing completely collapses, you look around the world and you know, when you're aware of these things and you try to understand, you're learning and you're trying to gain wisdom and you know, you're red pilled as the kind of passe saying goes, you know, you're aware of these things. It can kind of be stressful. And sometimes you can look around at people that aren't, you know, normies and they're just going through their day to day life, acting like this is all a temporary bump in the road and everything is going to go back to normal if we get a different president or we vote harder or something. You see, it can be, you can get jealous of those people because they're clueless, because of their cluelessness, because we're powerless in the sense that we know these things, we can see where things are headed. We don't have the way to put a brake on it. We don't have any way to stop it. We don't have any way to turn it around. It'd be frustrating. You think to yourself, these people who are unaware of it are really in a lot of ways better off because at least they're not like stressing out over it. Here's the thing. When this thing face plants, those people are going to be caught so unaware. I don't just mean like, oh, you can be prepping and getting ready for it, because there's only so much of that you could really realistically do. It's just the psychological and spiritual effect of it. When all of a sudden you've convinced yourself that the things around you, and this is why truth is so important. This is why I harp on truth as being synonymous with Christ, because he himself said he's the way, the truth, and the life. This is why truth is so important. It can be such a burden, but at the same time, you do understand, you see things coming. Those people who have convinced themselves, who have bought into a lie that everything's going to be fine, this is just temporary, they're going through their day-to-day life, you know, it's like somehow things are magically going to change and the country's going to quit ripping itself apart and the clown world is going to come to an end. When this thing face plants, those people are going to be psychologically and spiritually broken, a lot of them, because they've just refused to see it. And then when it suddenly just smashes them in the face, they're not going to be anywhere near equipped dealing with it. As we seek truth and wisdom and understanding, and at least understand what's going on and we're prepared. If you're spiritually fortified and that, I think it's going to do you more good. I really do. I think that's going to do you more good than all of the stocking up non-perishable foods you can do. Yeah, really. You need to be spiritually prepared. I think a lot of people that are quote unquote preppers, they ignore that part. You know, they're concentrating on, I don't know, I bought 5 more boxes of crackers and Spam today and put them up in the cupboard. Well, that's all well and good. But are you spiritually prepared for when you, like, literally your society is torn apart, the rule of law is completely broken down? Again, these are not just out of the blue concepts. We're seeing those things happen right now. And we can obviously see that they're going to get worse. They're not going to get better. There's no reason to think they're going to turn around and change its trajectory all on its own. It's like an artillery shell has been lobbed. It's not going to just randomly change direction. We know where this is headed. I think people underestimate the importance of being spiritually prepared and fortified for this. A lot of people are going to kill. I'm telling you, a lot of people are going to kill themselves over this. And I mean that like literally. I don't mean like because they're struggling and they're overdue. No, I mean literally people who are just completely unaware that this is coming, who would never believe that they would do something like that. When that reality hits them in the face, then they are not mentally, they're not spiritually prepared for it. I do. I think a lot of people are going to blow their brains out. They're going to kill themselves because they're just not equipped. They're not equipped to deal with it. They just can't handle it. Anyway, I do. I think it's important to be, I think it's probably the most important thing, to be spiritually prepared, to be understanding and to understand. And again, to be mentally, spiritually prepared. When you surround yourself with a lie, even if it makes you feel better, even if you find that comforting, it's still a lie. And at some point in time, it's going to blow up in your face. At some point in time, reality is going to reexert itself. And the more you try to cleave to truth, now, the less of a shock that's going to be. If you're already holding to truth, then when reality reasserts itself on the society, on the people around you, it's not going to be shocking for you. You've been slogging through it for a long time. for those who have found comfort in a lie, it's going to be devastating. I understand that. It's going to be devastating when the truth, when reality reexerts itself. You're going to see a lot of self-professed Christians fall away. They're going to completely lose their faith if they actually had any. It's easy to say praise God when things are good, but when things are going bad, it quickly shifts to blame God, you know. You're going to hear a lot of, you know, why did God happen? Why would God have this happen? Why is God doing this? People who say they love the Lord will certainly turn around, I believe, and basically start hating on the Lord because of what's going on in the world around them. And they don't have any understanding of how these things work, of how the Lord works, and how the world works, and again, these concepts of time and eternal, and what the purpose of our time here on earth is. That's why we try to do these things. That's why we have these discussions. I think it's so important to think about these things. One of the things I've been focusing on a lot in my mind, in my prayers, is this line in the Bible, in the book of James, you know, draw close to God, draw near unto the Lord, and he will draw near to you. Draw near to the Lord, and he will draw near to you. So what does that mean, though? What does that mean? How do you draw near to God? Pray more? You know, really, what does that mean? We don't really get any clue here. But who did Jesus say he was? He's the way, the truth, and the life. If you're drawing closer to the truth, you are drawing closer to the Lord. I do believe that. We read about prophets and their great visions and stuff, and we want to have those. You know, how come I can't have those? Why doesn't God light off a bush for me and have a big voice come out of heaven? You know, why don't I go to sleep and have a, you know, an amazing vision? You know, how come none of that stuff happens to me? I want to understand, how come he doesn't do these things? But the effort, the emphasis is put upon what we do. You know, first, we're supposed to be drawing near to him. And do we really do that? Do we really? We sit here and say, yeah, we do. But do we really? Furthermore, do we really even want to? What does it mean? People seem to shift back and forth between wanting God to micromanage their life and wanting God to stay the hell out of their lives. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to be offensive with my language, but really, that's the way people seem to be. They seem to switch back and forth. When they're going along, having a good time, living their life however they want to, doing, you know, pursuing whatever things they want to pursue, they don't got time for God. They want God to stay out of the way. Things start going off the rails, or they hit a bump in the road. All of a sudden, God, why are you letting this happen? You know, why are these bad things happening, God? Why are you doing this? It's your fault. There's no drawing near to God in it. When things are rolling along good, it's like, get out of my way, God. I don't got time, you know, for your instruction. I don't got time for you to tell me, well, this may seem like a good time right now, but don't even want to hear it. Think of it this way, as far as like people, you know, really wanting to draw near to God, you know, and again, people act like God micromanages their lives, but at the same time, they want him far away. You know, they want him to be Johnny on the spot if things aren't going exactly that they want him to, and then they want to blame him if things are not going the way they want him to. But do they really want God anywhere near? Think of it this way, as you mature, as the Holy Spirit becomes more active, the more you turn your heart over to the Holy Spirit, imagine that equates to God really is watching everything you do. You know, people say, well, God's watching everything you do, but they don't really believe that. Look the way they live their lives. Not on the surface. Because everybody got stuff they're dealing with that nobody else knows about, and they don't want nobody knowing about. That's reality. You know, not the face that people put on around you. The things are really going on in people's hearts and their minds and their lives. People got stuff going on. They don't want nobody knowing about it. They don't want God knowing about it. If drawing near unto God means the Holy Spirit's going to be more active and God literally is going to be watching everything you do, that's scary, isn't it? Because that means he's going to watch all the stuff that, you know, you're screwing up. He's going to watch all the sinful things you do. You don't want him doing that, do you? makes you hesitant. Don't want to go close to God because you don't want him watching everything you do. But you can't have it both ways. You can't blame God for everything, for not micromanaging your life properly. But at the same time, you really don't want him watching your life because, you know, you still want to do these sins. You still want to chase after the things of this world. So you wind up with this situation where people basically don't want to really have anything to do with God. They want to keep him on the sidelines. They want to do their own thing in their life. And as long as everything's good, that's fine. But as soon as they hit trouble, they want to suddenly jump up and pray, and they want God to come a running. You know, Lord, come a running. You're supposed to come rescue me now. Like he's just the rescue squad. Like he's the lifeguard on the beach. He's sitting up there on the little, you know, on that chair that's on like a little towel. And he's just supposed to sit there and let you go out there and swim around, do whatever you want to, play around on the beach. But then you're supposed to hey, I've got trouble here. Wave your arms. He's supposed to come flying off of there and come running out there and rescue you. When you ain't had no time for him, you ain't made any time. You haven't drawn near to him. You haven't drawn near to him, but suddenly you want him to jump up and come to you. But we're told here in the simple line from the book of James that the first part is we draw near to him. It's not the backwards. It's like God's going to draw near to you, and then you'll be, by that result, you'll draw close to him. No, the impetus, the emphasis, I should say, is on you acting first. You have to put the effort in first, and he's going to reciprocate that. He's going to come back your way. He's going to draw close to you. This is all important to understand and internalize because bad times are coming. Back in the Old Testament days, you had the prophets, and when the Lord had had enough of Israel's BS, biblical Israel, when he had enough of the Israelites' adultery against him, so as to speak, he sent the prophets out, and the prophets told them, this is what is going to happen. This is the bad things that are coming. So they at least had advanced warning. And prophets would be like, Lord, they're not going to listen anyway. And God's like, well, that's okay. You just got to tell them so that they don't have they don't have any excuse. They can understand why these things are coming about, In a lot of ways, as a society as a whole, in the Christian community, quote unquote Christian community as a whole, we don't have that. 90% of the churches are just doing, self-help pep talks. They're doing this. Every single message is some version of how much Jesus loves you and everything's going to be great. They're not preparing people for what is to come. I guess what I'm trying to get around to here is to understand this concept of drawing near the Lord is not an abstract thing. It's not it's something real, and it's something that is going to, it's something that's beneficial right now. It's something that's going to be beneficial in the near future in this life. It's not just about when you enter the eternal realm. I mean, that's obviously our ultimate destination one way or the other. But it's also very, very relevant in this world, in this temporal realm that we're currently in. Imagine the prophets and you're telling the people, this is what God's going to do. And they're persecuted. They call you names. Most of them get killed. If you lived, you'd be then everybody's running around when it happens, and they're like, oh my gosh, why is this happening? So you're like, what do you mean? Why is this happening? I've spent years telling you this is coming, and you just threw rocks at me and called me names, socially ostracized me, banned me off of Facebook. But socially ostracized, called you names, all the religious leaders said you were a heretic, said I was a heretic. Cast me out. Wouldn't have anything to do with me. And now everything that I told you God had told me to pass on to you was going to come about because of these reasons. And y'all run around going, well, why is God do? The Lord has abandoned us. No, you abandoned him. It's a shame that so much of the church now has abandoned the Old Testament as irrelevant. They think it's irrelevant, but it's very relevant. Read the judgment against Israel. The ancient nation of Israel, not the modern day state that's made up. The actual nation of Israel, the people, the Israelites. Understand that is relevant to what you're seeing happening today. Look around at the clown world. Look around at the clown world. God was judging the nation of Israel. You know, because one of the things they were doing was sacrificing their infants to Moloch. Apply it today. Is it really that different? God judged Sodom and Gomorrah. We know why. Look around. We have a whole month of celebration of Sodom and Gomorrah now. It's not, do people even read? How do, this is why they have to abandon the Old Testament, you know? You have rainbow flag churches. They have to ignore the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. Because otherwise they're basically admitting they have a giant nuclear, like a giant target for a nuclear bomb right on top of them. They have to ignore it. Because it doesn't fit into the modern narrative. It doesn't fit into what they want to believe. I know I've said this before, but I remember being young and, you know, just attending regular church and whatnot. And there's certain parts of the Bible where it basically insinuates that at the end times, at the end of the day, really a relative small number of people are actually going to be saved. Now, relative, the message is, I mean, it's not important to get hung up on the numbers themselves, because the message is that relatively small number of people are actually going to be saved. And I remember used to be, you know, being under the impression we live in a Christian nation, how could it be that only just basically a relatively small number really going to be saved? But now, as I've matured and come to understand and look at the world around me, I get it now. I get it. You got all these churches that are churches, not in the Christian sense, not in the traditional sense. There's churches of the world. They just put on the trappings. They put on the costume of Christianity, of Christianity and of religion. They put on the skin suit of that, but all they're doing is preaching the exact same thing that's on MSNBC. they're preaching the same thing that George Soros's groups are doing. I mean, they just put on a different costume. It's easy to understand. It becomes much easier to understand. It's really something for just a relatively small group of people. It is. It's a real shame. It's a real shame. Again, they abandoned the Old Testament, and the Old Testament is full of warnings, and they've disregarded these warnings. You know, I mean, imagine like if you had a piece of machinery, you know, you had a piece of machinery, and you know, of course now we have all these ridiculous warnings. You know, don't turn your infant's head first in this bucket if it's full of water because they could drown. Yeah, I mean, you have all these ridiculous warnings. You know, this has been noted by the state of California that this would be on a piece of machinery, you know, contains products that could cause cancer. Well, I'm not going to, you know, rip off a piece of the metal and start sucking on it. It's just, what are these stupid warnings? But you have like real warnings. I'm talking about like real warnings. Like if you got a wood chipper and it's got a big warning on there, you know, if this thing becomes plugged up, don't stuff your hand in it to try to unplug it while it's running. Because you're going to get... You're going to get ground up. You're going to be the wood chipper. You're going to be the chipped wood, I guess I should say. Imagine disregarding those warnings. Just shoving your hand in there anyway. You got warning blazoned on there. Don't stuff your hand in the wood chipper. And yet, you do it anyway. You know, it's okay. Imagine they put now, the church has basically got a big sign on there that says, shove your, in case it gets plugged up, be sure you shove your hand in there. Point being, of course, is that when they ignore the Old Testament, they ignore all these warnings. You know, don't do this because it will end badly. As, you know, the Christian church and as a society as a whole, we've ignored all the warnings. And now we look around and we're starting to see the results. We see where things are headed. And if you're familiar, it's all going to come a crashing down and everybody's going to be shocked. All these people are going to be running around shocked. It's like, why? Where did this come from? Same old thing. Over and over again. Just do the same stuff. Nobody warned us. Yeah, they did. I mean, really, why does God need to send a new prophet down to go out and announce these things? I mean, this is the exact same pattern. We've already been told we got a written documentation of it. We just don't want to read it. We don't want to read any of the warnings. We just want to keep on going and act like the result is going to be different than it was back then because, you know, everything's new. It's a whole new world now. People always say things are different now. No, No, because the natural order and the way God operates is the same as ever was. It's the same as it ever was. But it'll be different now. No. If you shove your hand in the wood chipper, you're going to become chipped wood. You bloody stump. That's all you're going to have left. People don't want to heed it. They want to make themselves feel better. They want to deny the truth and be comforted with a lie, even if ultimately that ends in destruction. I've rambled along here, and I don't even know that there's been a coherent overall message in our Christian-specific segment this week. I guess if there was an overriding theme, it would be to be spiritually prepping. You know, you talk about preppers, people prepping, gotta get prepped. You need to be spiritually prepping. That's going to be more important. Ultimately, it's going to be more important than stocking up on canned food. I mean, it's fine if you want to stock up. I'm not saying, you know, you don't need to do that. But I mean, if you do the one and ignore the other, you're going to be in a bad place. Spiritually prepping, you need to be spiritually prepared. And you probably are. I mean, if you're pursuing the truth, you understand. You understand where all this is heading, and you're bracing yourself. You at least get it. It may not seem important now. You may think, well, this doesn't help me, but it does. As I said before, a lot of these people that are in a state of basically willful ignorance are going to break. They're going to break mentally. They're going to break spiritually. You want to talk about, like I said before, you talk about suicide rates going through the roof. People that are not prepared for this, that haven't spiritually prepped for it, and be offing themselves left and right because they're just not going to be able to deal with it. And ultimately, as long as we're on this earth, as long as we're in this realm of time, as finite as it is, our job is to soldier on. Our job is to keep on trying to keep on and to cleave to the faith and ultimately draw as near as we can to God so that he will draw as near as possible to us. We're going to go ahead and wrap up on that note. Again, I hope you got something out of it. I'm wrapping up here and I'm sitting here kind of shaking my head because I'm thinking it was just kind of a rambling mess, Dan. I don't know. It's just the way it is. Hopefully you got something out of it. It's always my hope. So anyway, we're going to go ahead and get on out of here. If you're new around these parts, I do the Friday Daily Nationalist with Sven Longchamp. It's always a fun discussion. It's a short show. It's usually only about 30 minutes. Of course, since I'm involved, it always runs long every single time. It runs long. But it's always a fun discussion, so hopefully you'll tune in and catch that as well. And of course, obviously, we hope you'll tune in and catch us here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.